who has been expelled from God's kingdom of special grace and mercy. And the reason for his expulsion is twofold. Number one is Shaitan's arrogance. Shaitan knew what was right and haq, yet he refused to bow down and accept. And secondly was Shaitan's defiance. He knew what was evil and wrong, yet he deliberately committed the evil. And therefore, he disqualified himself from receiving God's special grace and mercy. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We turn humbly to God and we ask for help and guidance for three reasons. Number one, we believe He is Allah, the absolute, infinite, perfect being, the source of all goodness and perfection. And therefore, none can hope to achieve any goodness and any virtue and any perfection until and unless God wills it so. Although when the goodness reaches us, it may pass through a variety of media. And secondly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahman. He is overflowing with infinite love and mercy and grace, such that everything in the universe, every entity and every particle is a continuous manifestation and expression of His love and His mercy and His grace, whereby that entity comes to life, it survives, it thrives, it grows and proceeds towards its development and perfection. And therefore we turn to Him for help. And thirdly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahim. Not only is His love universal, because it is unlimited and abundant and eternal, there is a special type of grace and love that is specific to those of us who respond to Him, who believe in Him, who accept His laws, who mold their lives according to His dictates, and thereby they gradually expand their capacity to be able to receive more grace from that unlimited reservoir of love and mercy. And therefore we turn to Him. وَالصَّلَاةُ وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَى سَيِّدِنَا وَنَبِيِّنَا مُحَمَّدْ وَآلِهِ الطَّاهِرِينَ And we send our salutations and greetings and our expression of love and loyalty and allegiance and obedience to the Holy Prophet of Islam, that most praised one, because he was the most perfect one. And the reason for his perfection was twofold. Number one, his understanding of the absolute reality of the universe, of who God is, of what God's attributes and perfect, infinite, beautiful names are, his infinite love, his unlimited knowledge, his endless power, justice, mercy, grace, generosity, majesty, all these beautiful names, and of how God, this absolute reality of the universe, is governing the universe moment by moment with total control over every particle, with wisdom, with justice, with love. He is governing and directing the universe towards its goal of perfection. The Prophet's understanding of this absolute reality in all its dimensions was the maximum possible for any human being. And secondly, the Prophet responded to this absolute reality in such a way that in his personal life and his public life, be it in his thinking or his feelings or his actions, be it with his family or be it with everybody else in society, public, political, economic, social, cultural, military life, in all dimensions, in all aspects, the Holy Prophet was the most submissive and humble to the will of this absolute reality of the universe. And therefore, he was the most praised one, and therefore the most perfect one. And we send our salutations on his holy progeny, who were the next best in perfection after him, and especially so the third holy Imam, who undertook this movement of fighting against evil, of establishing virtue and justice and godly values on earth, whereby his movement then became a role model for all subsequent movements up until that final global movement to establish divine values on the earth. Respected elders and brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. We were discussing the importance of participating in these gatherings of commemoration. And one of the most important tasks we have is that of mourning and weeping. But weeping can be at a very basic level, which is just reactive and emotional, but which can be engaged in by any individual. Secondly, is a level of weeping whereby we begin to gain an understanding of the true personality of Imam and what he stood for, and we begin to identify with it. So we begin to develop a love for the virtues for which he died for, and a hatred for the evil against which he fought. And that is a weeping based on understanding, the empathic level of weeping. And then a higher level of weeping, which we should strive for, is the experiential one, where the intensity of the love for the virtues for which he represented, and the intensity of the hatred of the evil against which he fought, reaches to such a level that you become eager and you say, "Oh, I wish I were there. I would have fought with you. I submit to your call with the totality of my being. If I were there, لَبَّيْكَ دَاعِيَ اللَّهِ إِن لَمْ يُجِبْكَ بَدَنِي فَقَدْ أَجَابَكَ قَلْبِي وَشَعْرِي وَبَشَرِي وَهَوَايَ وَرَأْيِي." And then there is a fourth level of weeping whereby we connect to the purpose of existence, and that is that final struggle to establish godly values on the earth, whereby we say, "True, I was not there at that time, but then this struggle is continuous. Even today, I am ready, should the opportunity arise, to stand up and to fight for virtue and to fight against evil. فَنُصْرَتِ لَكُمْ مُعَدَّةٌ فَمَعَكُمْ مَعَكُمْ لَا مَعَ عَدُوِّكُمْ." Question: if I were to be tested, where would I stand? Next slide, please. And I said that in order to answer this question, let's consider this particular one, that Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not base his uprising in Medina or in Mecca or in Yemen or anywhere else, but he did it in Kufa. He was moving towards Kufa because it was, in the whole of the Islamic world, it was Kufa where there was the maximum response to his opposition to Yazid. However, this maximum response from between 12,000 to 18,000 suddenly turned upside down, and the supporters became the opponents, the so-called supporters. Question: what happened? Next slide, please. If you look at the evidence, you discover that the three major factors, there were several other factors, but the three major factors which played an influential role in converting, in subverting supporters and making them into opponents, were these tools which are always employed by the evil empire all the time. The media, whereby they dupe and they deceive by propaganda. Money, whereby they buy silence. And military might, where they terrorize an individual. We considered the role of media yesterday. Allow me to now concentrate on the second particular tool, and that is money. Imam alayhi salam, in his movement from Mecca towards Kufa, comes across several travelers. For example, one traveler, he asks him, "Tell me, what is the situation in Kufa?" And the traveler from Kufa tells him, "فَأَمَّا أَشْرَافُ النَّاسِ فَقَدْ أُعْظِمَتْ رِشْوَتُهُمْ. As far as the elders and the leaders of the tribes in Kufa are concerned, rishwa has bought them off. وَأَمَّا سَائِرُ النَّاسِ فَقُلُوبُهُمْ تَهْوِي إِلَيْكَ وَسُيُوفُهُمْ غَدًا عَلَيْكَ. But the rest of the people, today their hearts are towards you, yes, but tomorrow their swords will be against you. Money. Might. When Ibn Ziyad comes to Kufa, comes to the public mosque, there's a gathering. Those people who are identified as opposition, they were arrested. In front of public, they were executed. And Ibn Ziyad then makes an announcement. Ana limuhsinikum wa muti'ikum kalwalidil bar. If you are obedient, then I'm just like a loving father towards you. وَسَوْطِي وَسَيْفِي لِمَنْ خَالَفَ أَمْرِي. But my sword is for he who opposes. You will be hunted, you will be arrested, you will be tortured, you will be executed. Terror. And it worked. Next slide, please. So question. We need to identify, we need to ponder as we sit and we grieve and we mourn and we weep, as we begin to feel hatred for the evil that was perpetrated there, we must recognize that it was ordinary people who became agents in the hands of the evil empire. Question, where would I stand? One of the factors that makes people fail is money. Where would I stand? We are living in times where there is a dominant culture which gives importance to money, to material possessions, to acquisition, to getting a life where you're rich. I'm not saying Islam is against getting money, I will just explain that. But we're living in a culture which is propagating money as the most important thing in life. This survey conducted by Roper, Americans were asked, How satisfied are you with your life? Different aspects of their lives were being questioned. About your friends, about your house, about the type of house you have, about your schooling, about your family, about your job. One thing that stood out in that survey was the majority said that the least that they're satisfied with in their life is money. They don't have enough money. Yet another study, University of Michigan, the Institute of Social Research, conducted this survey, asked this question. What is it that hampers and stops you from your search for a good life? The most common answer, I don't have enough money. What is it that would improve the quality of your life? The most common answer, I wish I had more money. Look at the importance and priority and obsession with money. Next slide, please. You would say, oh well, what's wrong with money if you don't have enough money, if you're poor, why don't you go for more? There's nothing wrong with that. People who are earning $75,000, when they were asked, one out of two women earning that much. Two out of three men earning that much. Four out of five total people earning that much said, no, we're not happy with 75, we want more. Back in the 80s, if they were asked, what income would fulfill your dreams in life? They said about 50,000 would make me achieve my dreams. Come the 90s, the figure was 90,000. Come the 21st century, you guess how much that would be. Next slide, please. Thomas Naylor, he's an economics professor, teaches in Duke University on corporate strategy. So when students come to my class, for 6 years he's been teaching this course, training corporate leaders, and I ask them, write down, What is your strategic plan for your life? What is it that you want to do with your life after you graduate and you enter into the job market in the corporate world? So if you look at the answers, except for a few cases, the majority of them, the answers they give, their plans for life. What is it? It can be summarized in three things. They want money, they want power, and they want things. Ordinary things? No, big things. Very big things, he says. Things like vacation homes. Things like expensive foreign automobiles. Things like yachts. Things like executive jet airplanes. And he says the surprising thing is, in the plan for their life, you don't find mention of concern for the family. You don't find mention of spirituality and God. You don't find concern for ethics, for workers, for employees. You don't find concern for social responsibility, global problems. These are corporate leaders being trained. Back in the 70s, one out of every two college entrants would say, the most important thing I want to do is make more money. Come the 90s, not one out of two. Three out of four college entrants said the most important thing they want to do out of college is to make more money. You notice this culture of material possession before you start college, as you are in college, after you graduate from college, it's the same. Material possession. That's the goal in life. Next slide, please. And yet, the reality is, material possession, if it is a means to bring us happiness in life, it's good. But it doesn't bring happiness. A survey was conducted back in the 90s, 1991. Several hundred thousand people were asked, in almost about 20 different countries, what is their degree of feeling, subjective feeling, about happiness in life. What the researchers discovered is that those who were poor were less happy. Those who were rich were more happy. But amongst the rich, there was a certain degree of richness beyond which more richness did not bring more happiness. So if you're poor, you don't have the basic necessities of life, you will be uncomfortable and unhappy. But when you start getting money, to a certain level, it will bring more happiness. But beyond a certain level, no more happiness. In fact, misery. Studies showed that a few decades ago, the amount of money an average American was making compared to, let's say, in the 90s, the salary was double, yet the degree of happiness was lesser. See the big problem? Money, to a certain extent, necessary, beyond a certain extent, a source of misery. And this is exactly what the Quran warns us, and this is exactly what led to the problem in Karbala. Next slide, please. Look at what the Quran tells us. Beware about the dunya. Beware about these material possessions. The possessions can become a distraction, lahu. They are a deception, ghurur. Three, they're just a decoration and an attraction and a glitter and a glamour. Four, they are a diversion, ghafla, from the main purpose of life. And five, be careful. Dunya is after all going to die. Next slide, please. In Surah Al-An'am, in Surah Ankabut, in Surah by the name of the Holy Prophet, and in Surah Hadid. In all these surahs, this theme is repeated again and again. Material possessions, beware. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهْوٌ وَلَعِبٌ. It's a distraction. Beware. Don't get trapped. Next. Or in Surah Al-Imran and Surah Al-An'am, and in Surah Araf, and Surah Luqman, and Surah Fatir, and Surah Jafiyah, and Surah Hadid. Again, the same theme is repeated again and again. Beware. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الْغُرُورِ. It can deceive. It looks attractive, but inside it's ugly. It may promise to deliver success and happiness, but actually brings misery. You may think you'll get more comfort, but actually there is pain associated with it. Don't be deceived. It's a mirage. You go after it, when you arrive there, you find, no, it doesn't quench that thirst which is there. I mean, we are not just material beings, whereby only material comforts and material possessions will satisfy our yearning. Beware, the dunya is ghurur. Next slide, please. In Surah Al-Imran, and Surah Hud, and Surah Kahf, and Surah Qasas, and Surah Hadid, again, the theme is repeated. Beware of material possessions. They are just a zina, just an attraction, just a decoration. وَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّن شَيْءٍ إِلَّا مَتَاعُ الدُّنْيَا وَزِينَتُهَا وَمَا عِنْدَ اللَّهِ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى أَفَلَا تَعَقِلُونَ. Don't you realize that what God will promise you as reward is much better and more long-lasting than these material comforts and material possessions? Next slide, please. In Surah Rum, chapter 30, ayah number 7, Allah says, يَعْلَمُونَ ظَاهِرًا مِنَ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَهُمْ عَنِ الْآخِرَةِ هُمْ غَافِلُونَ. They're just attracted to the apparent aspect of this physical life. What they don't realize, the true, long-lasting life is the one of Akhirah. But the dunya puts them into a state of ghafla. Next slide, please. In Surah Nisa, and Surah A'raf, and Surah Anfal, and Surah Nur, the word used for the dunya is arad. Yuriduna arad ad-dunya. Wallahu yuridu al-akhirah. They seek only the superficial, the fleeting, the temporary pleasures of this world. Whereas what Allah is inviting us is towards a pleasure which is not superficial, it's deep and profound. Which is not temporary, it's permanent. Which is not just of one variety, it's of a diversity. That's the crux of the invitation of the Quran. Next slide, please. And therefore you notice what happened in Karbala. Umar ibn Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, the leader and the commander, what is it that motivated him against Imam alayhi salam, other than the material possessions of the dunya? Before I continue, a concluding statement. I'm not trying to suggest to strive for money and for material comforts and possessions is not allowed in Islam. Oh, definitely it is. Allah says money is khair in Surah Baqarah. Allah says money is fadlullah, Surah Jumu'ah. Allah says money is qiyaman linnas. It is the backbone of your economic status in society. Allah says money is tayyibat min al-rizq, Surah A'raf. Allah says money is zina. Qul man harrama zinat Allah allati akhrajaha li'ibadih. Money is very important. But what is dangerous is when it becomes an obsession, a preoccupation, a passion, whereby we then forget other things in life. There is no God, there is no spirituality, there is no halal, there is no haram. It is money only. That is the one which is dangerous. And now look at Umar ibn Sa'd, the epitome of that preoccupation with money. Before Ashura, on the 9th, Imam alayhi salam comes out with about 20 of his soldiers and he says, I request to meet Umar ibn Sa'd. And who comes out with 20 of his. And the two camps meet. And Imam says, no, I want a meeting man to man, face to face. And Imam tells Umar ibn Sa'd, أَلَا تَتَّقِ اللَّهِ أَلَّذِي إِلَيْهِ مَعَادُكَ. Don't you fear God? What is this army that you have collected here for what? وَأَنَا إِبْنُ بِنْتِ مَنْ عَلِمْتِ. You know who I am. I am the son of the daughter of the Prophet. You know who I am. You know who God is. You know about the Akhirah. What is it that you're doing? And Umar ibn Sa'd says, أَخَافُ أَن يُهْدَمَ دَارِي. They will destroy my home if I don't obey their commands. And the man says, أَنَا أَبْنِيهَا لَكْ. I will replace. Are you afraid of losing your home? We'll replace it for you. أَنَا أَخَافُ أَن تُؤْخَذَ ضَيْعَتِي. All my possessions will be confiscated. Imam says, أَنَا أُخْلِفُ عَلَيْكَ خَيْرًا مِنْهَا. I will substitute that with much better than what you will lose. أَنَا أَخَافُ عَيَالِي. My family, they will be hurt. And then he put his head down and he was silent. Imam understood, this man is moved so much and possessed so much with the preoccupation of the dunya and the material comforts and the power and the prestige and the position, political power that will be given to him, that he is blind to the truth now. And Imam then walks out. He says that, Malak, woe be to you. ذَبَحَكَ اللَّهُ فِي فِرَاشِكَ عَاجِلًا. May you suffer a terrible death. لَا غَفَرَ لَكْ يَوْمَ حَشْرِكَ. May Allah deny you His special grace and mercy on the Day of Judgment, because you have closed the doors to yourself. وَإِنِّي لَأَرْجُوْ أَنْ لَا تَأْكُلَ مِنْ بُرِّ الْعِرَاقِ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. And I pray, this power and this prestige and these possessions that you seek, you shall not enjoy them for very long. Next slide, please. Contrast Qasim. Qasim, a young child, not even mature, not mature biologically, but mentally and spiritually, oh, very mature, much more mature than Umar ibn Sa'd. Well, he was not the only child, incidentally. We have other children in Karbala. Imam Baqir alayhi salam was about 3 years old. Amr bin Janada, supposed to be about 9 or 11 years old. His father was killed in the first attack, Janada bin Ka'b bin Harith. He survived. His mother tells him, go and tell Imam you want to go and fight. He comes to the Imam, he says, I want to go and fight. And Imam says, no, but your father has been killed and you support your mother. He says, no, my mother has asked me to come here. Our congratulations to these mothers. Imam Hassan's children were there. We're told there's one, Ahmad bin Hassan, or Abi Bakr bin Hassan, 16 years old. We don't have much details about him. We're told he did go and fight and he was killed. Abdullah bin Hassan, the 11-year-old. You remember those last moments Imam Hussein has fallen down on the ground? That boy runs from the camp. That's him, Abdullah bin Hassan. But the hero we are going to discuss tonight is Qasim bin Hassan. Next slide, please. Biologically not yet mature, but spiritually very advanced. Look at him. On the eve of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells the people, his companions, tomorrow is the final day. غَدًا أُقْتَلْ وَتُقْتَلُونَ كُلُّكُمْ مَعِي لَا يَبْقَى مِنْكُمْ وَاحِدٌ. Not even a single adult male is going to survive. All are going to die. And they're all happy about that. Qasim comes and asks, my dear uncle, أَنَا فِي مَنْ يُقْتَلْ. Will I also be given the honor of being a martyr? Oh, but you're a young man. You're not even mature. You've got a life in front of you. I'm just paraphrasing. You've got a life in front of you. College kids today, when they go to university, they're thinking about making money. Aren't you bothered about your future? كَيْفَ الْمَوْتُ عِنْدَكْ. How do you see death? How do you see life? Death is not easy. You have to fight. You'll suffer. There's pain. How do you see death? Look at the response. The mature response compared to Umar ibn Sa'd. أَحْلَى مِنَ الْعَسَلِ. Money, material possession. Oh yes, it is sweet. But sweeter than that is the pleasure which Allah has promised in the other side. Pleasure which is longer lasting. Pleasure which is much more deeper. Pleasure which is much more diverse. Pleasure which is much more intense. What can I say? Sweeter than anything which is sweet. أَحْلَى مِنَ الْعَسَلِ. The uncle was so proud, he says, بُنَيَّ فِدَاكَ عَمُّكَ. May your uncle be sacrificed for you, my son. Imam, May your uncle be sacrificed for you. Yes, tomorrow you shall be killed also. Next slide, please. And look at this man, young boy, when he goes out to the battlefield. إِن تُنْكِرُونِي فَأَنَا إِبْنُ الْحَسَنِ سِبْتُ النَّبِيِّ الْمُصْطَفَى وَالْمُؤْتَمَنِ وَهَذَا حُسَيْنٌ كَالْأَسِيرِ الْمُرْتَهَنِ بين أناس لا سقوا صوب مزن. If you don't know me, let me tell you, I'm Qasim, son of Hassan. If you don't know who Hassan is, he is the grandson of that prophet who is trusted, who has been chosen by God. Do you know who you are fighting? Fighting the Hassan, fighting the prophet. We represent him. The pathetic thing. Qasim, when he went out to the battlefield, the maktal says he was crying. Crying for what? Look at the pathetic state of the community. Here is an imam, the righteous imam. You've abandoned him. You've arrested him. You've surrounded him. You've kept him like a captive. In ransom. May God deny you all his grace and mercy. A young man. Next slide, please. A young man. Definitely he must have fought bravely. Definitely he must have suffered pain by the sword. He was hit, he was hurt. But Sheikh Saduq quotes this from him. He says, Qasim, when he was fighting, he talks to his nafs. لَا تَجْزِعِي نَفْسِي فَكُلٌّ فَانِي أَلْيَوْمَ تَلْقِينَ ذُرَ الْجِنَانِ. Nafs, don't grieve in pain. Take the pain of the sword. Get the hits. Don't grieve. Everyone is going to die. These pains are temporary. You know, today we are going to reach the pinnacle of the bliss possible for man. Qasim against the dunya. But he's struck. He falls. Ya amma. The maktal says, فَخَرَجَ عَمُّهُ كَالسَّقَرْ. His uncle swept to the battlefield like a hawk, swift and right on target. He arrives there. عَزَّ وَاللَّهِ عَلَىٰ عَمِّكَ أَن تَدْعُوهُ فَلَا يُجِيبُهُ. Qasim, it is very painful for your uncle that you call him, but he can't answer you. أَوْ يُجِيبُكَ فَلَا يَنْفَعُكَ. Or that when you call him, it's just too late to help you. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك وأناخت برحمك. عليكم منا جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقينا وبقي الليل والنهار.